Good morning, everyone. We'll just give this a few seconds for people to come on in the room. All righty. Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Catherine Rice, and I'm a co-founder and a board member and the secretary for NC Broadband Matters. We are thrilled to bring you this year's fifth webinar called How to Plan for North Carolina's Digital Inclusion Programs and Beyond. So you know our format, the speaker discussion will last for the first hour, and then we will open the floor to audience Q&A. If you have questions, please use the Q&A feature rather than the chat feature so that we can collect your questions for later use and information. So we will be providing anyone who registered an archive video of this webinar, and we will post that video and any of the presentations you see today on our website, hopefully by tomorrow. We have a powerhouse of speakers for you today, so I will not dawdle. And I will pass the virtual microphone to our moderator and speaker, Deborah Watts, who is senior partner of Broadband Catalyst and a fellow NC Broadband Matters board member. So take it away, Deb.
Thanks, Catherine. Catherine left one thing out of that introduction for me, and that's that I'm a very longtime digital inclusion evangelist. And that explains why I'm so incredibly jazzed about today's topic. It's, you know, for literally decades now, there's been a growing recognition of a digital divide that's separating regions and populations into haves and have nots, both, the nation and in our state. For too long, for much of that time, the focus has been on the infrastructure side of the equation. And not much investment or energy's been addressed to the digital inclusion side, to the use and to the adoption. We still need to address remaining broadband availability challenges, but high-level attention and game-changing resources are finally coming up to address the need to bring everyone into the digital community. My vision on this is a riff on the Three Musketeers. I'd say broadband for all and all for broadband. Helping make that vision a reality are our amazing speakers, who I can state with enormous confidence are uniquely positioned to talk about digital inclusion with grounded vision and deep wells of experience. Annette Taylor, Director of the Office of Digital Equity and Literacy in the North Carolina Department of Information Technology. Maggie Woods, Manager of Policy and Programs at the Institute for Emerging Issues, and many of you know as managing the Band NC Grant Program. And Krista Wagner-Vinson, the Senior Program Officer for Broadband Infrastructure at Rural LISC. Each of these speakers will take some minutes to provide an introduction to the programs that they manage, and that'll be followed by a panel discussion of the challenges to digital equity, the promising models for resolving them that we're seeing, and developments that you need to keep on your radar. And then we'll reserve the final 15 minutes for Q&A with the audience. You should know that North Carolina has long been a leader in broadband policy and planning. So I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that we are, again, one of the very first states to set up a digital equity office. And we can all be proud of that, and we're going to work together to make sure that it's as wonderful as it can be. Annette is here today to help us learn more about that and introduce the programs. And I'm going to pass the baton to Annette. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. And thank you so much, Deborah, for the introduction and for this opportunity to join you all for the webinar today. I recently joined the North Carolina DIT in the Office of Digital Equity and Literacy as its director, leading this effort on digital equity and helping the team close the digital divide in North Carolina. I'm new to the office, but I'm not new to the issues, and I'm not new to disparities. I've been working on the challenges in marginalized communities for most of my career, serving the left behind and creating access to resources for the hungry, for the homeless, and for the helpless population. I've worked in foundations. I've worked in public policy. I actually worked in the fourth poorest district in the U.S., and that's the first congressional district here in North Carolina. But I was right there with you all during COVID. I'm living just like you all to tell the story of the countless children and families that suffered, from lack of access to technology, folks who were left behind due to lack of skills to even be able to utilize it effectively. So now that I'm here, I'm putting together a team to develop a statewide digital equity plan. And that is why this is very important. As you heard Deborah say, we've talked about infrastructure, broadband infrastructure is nothing new. People have been working across the state for a while now, trying to develop the right plan for their communities. Things look different in different places, depending on the region, depending on where you are. So it's my mission, the same mission as our Governor Cooper and the Biden administration, internet for all. And so that is what our goal is. As you know, we want every American to have access to technologies that would allow them to start a small business, attend classes, visit with their doctor, and really just be able to participate in this modern economy. So we will be putting together a plan. You'll get to hear more about that. We will be connecting with organizations like you all to help inform our work and really get a really great sense of how we can continue to be one of the top, really the goal is to be among the top five states that have a successful best practice and template for digital equity and inclusion. So with that, I will move forward and share my panel with my colleague, Maggie Woods. She's gonna tell you a little bit more, and hopefully we'll be able to have a conversation about what we've already been doing and what the state has already, how we've already benefited our constituents in the way of internet access. And so now let me introduce Maggie Woods, one of my colleagues. As I said, she's been at the forefront of digital inclusion planning. And so she'll share more about her work and a broad overview. Thank you.
Maggie? Thank you so much, Annette. I appreciate the introduction. Like Annette said, I'm Maggie Woods. I'm a policy and program manager at the Institute for Emerging Issues, and I run our Band NC Digital Inclusion Program. I am in a unique position today to be wearing two different hats, because while I'm currently at the Institute for Emerging Issues, I am transitioning to the Office of Digital Equity and Literacy. I'll be joining Annette's team as a digital equity manager full-time in July, and I'm working there part-time, very part-time right now. In my presentation today, I'll be sharing both my perspective from the Institute, but also from the state as well. And I just wanted to start, I know that a lot of the folks who are attending this webinar have been attending these webinars from NC Broadband Matters for years, and have been really focusing heavily on broadband infrastructure. And so I wanted to take just a step back and talk through some definitions so that we're all on the same page today. So we're talking about digital equity, and this is the first in the nation office of digital equity and literacy. But what is digital equity? Digital equity is a condition in which all individuals and communities have the information technology capacity needed for full participation in our society, democracy, and economy. Digital equity is necessary for all aspects of life, civic and cultural participation, employment, lifelong learning, and access to essential services. We talk about how digital equity is the goal. This is what we're working for every single day. And the way we get to digital equity is through policies that get us to digital inclusion. So digital inclusion policies. What is digital inclusion? Digital inclusion has three main elements. The first is access to affordable high-speed internet. And you'll see that I've bolded both access and affordable here, because if you have access to the infrastructure, but you cannot afford it, you still won't be able to use it. So both are necessary. You must also have a device, an internet-enabled device that meets your needs, typically a computer, laptop, or tablet. We typically don't mean a smartphone. It's really hard to do your homework on a smartphone. It's hard to do your work on a smartphone. Smartphones also have data limits often that can be very expensive if you go over. And then finally, you have to have the digital skills to use the internet and to use that device. We call this digital literacy. And I like to talk about digital literacy as a spectrum. So we often think about basic digital literacy. Can you turn on a computer? Can you get to your email? Can you do basic functions? That's absolutely very important. But in order to get a higher paying job, to move up on your career ladder, being able to increase your digital literacy, learn to code, learn to use databases, that's really how we see economic growth through digital inclusion. So I want to, now that we've kind of talked through some basic definitions, I just want to introduce who the Institute for Emerging Issues is and how we are involved in this work. So IEI is a public policy center based out of NC State University. We have a really big, bold mission, and that's to make North Carolina a more vibrant and economically competitive state for everyone. We've traditionally been a convening organization, so we're really good at bringing people from different backgrounds, different perspectives, different sides of the political aisle to wrestle with the big issues facing our state. We host large-scale conferences, as well as regional listening sessions, community meetings, and really at our heart, we believe that the best solutions for community problems come from communities themselves. So while we may share best practices, what's working elsewhere in the state, we are always here to listen and to learn from all of you. So one of the signature programs out of IEI that I run is called Band NC, Building a New Digital Economy. And the goal of Band NC is to equip counties to meet needs and to build more digitally equitable communities. So remember, digital equity is always the goal. We're working to make North Carolina the first state in the nation where every single county has a digital inclusion plan or a digital equity plan. And what I mean by a digital inclusion plan, it's a community strategic plan that addresses the components of digital inclusion and outlines strategies to close the digital divide. And we'll talk more about this at a community level right now, and then in just a moment, we'll talk about what this could look like at a statewide level. I have to say, I'm immensely proud of this map. We launched Band NC in June 2020, so just at the very peak of the pandemic. And at that time, only one county had a digital equity plan, and that was Charlotte-Mecklenburg. They've been leaders in this field for a really long time. I continue to learn from them every day. But since then, through our grant program and through technical assistance, we've helped support the development of 15 other digital inclusion plans. And some of these plans have been done on a county level, others have been done on a regional level. But you can see those plans and those counties highlighted in green. And we have a link, I'll put it in the chat and make sure that this is sent out afterwards, that has a link to all those digital inclusion plans that are completed. And then you'll see that yellow color indicates the plans that are currently in progress. So there's 28 plans currently in progress. We're working on adding a number of more plans. By this time next year, I think half the state will have been completed their plans or be in progress. And you'll see that most of Western, in fact, all of Western North Carolina is colored in that yellow or that green color. And part of this is because of a project that we've embarked on with principal investment from the Dogwood Health Trust to ensure that every one of their counties has a digital inclusion plan in place. We're partnering with all five councils of government to ensure that those plans are done well and involve community input. And so I'd be happy to share more in a discussion or afterwards. I'll make sure that you have my contact information as well. And if you represent one of those in progress counties and you wanna be put in touch with the organizers, please reach out to me. Okay, so that's what we've been doing at IEI, really exciting stuff. I do wanna kind of shift and put on my state hat right now and talk through where we are in terms of digital inclusion data in the state and where we wanna get to. What are our metrics for success? I don't wanna belabor this top statistic. I know that many of you know the challenges of broadband access data, but according to the FCC, 95.5% of North Carolinians have access to broadband internet. We have that in quotes. We know that that is not a true number. The state's goal is to make that number a true 98%. And we'll talk about how we'll get there in just a moment. Another 73% of households in North Carolina are adopting the internet or have a broadband internet subscription. And this might seem high, but it really depends on who you are, where you are in the state, what county you're in, what your income level is, and what race or minority group you come from. So we know that white households have the highest broadband adoption or subscription rates in the state, followed by Hispanic Latino households, Black, and the Native American households. The state is working to ensure that no matter who you are, 80% of the population is adopting the internet. And 100% of those households that have children, school-aged children, are adopting the internet. So how are we going to get here? Well, we have tremendous investment from the state. So the General Assembly passed the state budget this past fall and is providing almost $1 billion in support for broadband infrastructure, including through $380 million for the Great Grant Program, which of course closed earlier this month. And my colleagues at the Broadband Infrastructure Office have been sorting through the 305 applications they received, which is just tremendous. But I wanna make note of this historic landmark investment, $50 million for digital equity and literacy. This is the first ever that we've seen an investment in digital equity and literacy. And Annette and I and the team are really going to be teasing out how best to leverage those funds, but likely it'll come in three different areas. It'll be used to support outreach and engagement for the Affordable Connectivity Program. That's that federal program that reduces the cost of internet by $30 per month. It'll also be used to ensure that low-income households, low-income families have access to the devices that they need and know how to use them. And then finally, likely a large chunk of this $50 million will go directly to communities in the form of community capacity building grants to help communities develop and launch digital equity programming and digital literacy programming in their communities. This is why at IEI, I've been so focused on getting people to develop digital inclusion plans, to bring together a coalition, to have recommendations for how to close the digital divide in their community so they can leverage these kinds of funds. As you all probably also know, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, also known as the Infrastructure Act, provided a lot of funding for digital equity and broadband infrastructure. I do want to talk through the Digital Equity Act programming and what we know about them right now, because this is going to be essential to the jobs that this office will be able to do. And so the Digital Equity Act provides $2.75 billion and comes in three different forms. The first is in a state digital equity planning grant program that allows state entities to develop a statewide digital equity plan. So like at IEI, we've been working on county and regional-wide digital equity plans. This is a statewide plan. The second is a state digital equity capacity building grant. Again, this is funds going to the state to then be able to implement that digital equity plan. So it's not a plan that just sits on a website somewhere or sits on a shelf. It is a plan that can be implemented. And then finally, the Digital Equity Competitive Grant Program. This will be open. It's run through NTIA, the National Telecommunications Information Association, and will be a competitive program that folks like you all who are joining may be able to apply for. These latter two grant programs, we don't have much information on yet. We'll likely find out more about a year or so from now. But about 10 days ago, we had the U.S. Secretary of Commerce in Durham announcing the information about the state digital equity planning grant program. We have 60 days as a state entity, so the Office of Digital Equity and Literacy will be the ones applying for that program. We have 60 days to apply for it. It is due July 12th. We expect to hear about funding mid-September to late September. And once the funds are received, we will have 1 year to develop a digital equity plan. And these digital equity plans are really meant to support the creation of community-centric solutions and provide resources to community organizations to help scale digital equity and digital literacy programs. I think the key here is community and collaboration. These plans are meant to focus specifically on those groups you see here, those bullets, those groups who have been traditionally marginalized and digitally excluded from the start. And so we cannot create this plan in a vacuum. Like Annette said, we are going to need the support and help of all of you. So a lot more to come on this. Think of this as the beginning of the conversation, but we will definitely be reaching out to you to help us think through how to best develop a plan that meets the needs across the state and that has ownership of everyone, because the digital divide is not one person's problem, it's everyone's problem. So I'm going to leave it here for now. I'm really looking forward to continued discussion on this, but I'm so pleased to introduce Krista Wagner-Vinson from Rural LISC, who has tremendous experience with collaboration, both in the state as well as nationally. And I look forward to hearing from her and hearing her wisdom as we talk about how to close the digital divide in North Carolina. So Krista.
Thank you so much, Maggie. What a kind introduction. It's really wonderful to be back with the NC Broadband Matters community, this time representing Rural LISC, the Local Initiative Support Corporation. I do have a couple of slides. I'm going to attempt to share my screen. Okay, great. Very good. Just a little bit about LISC, the Local Initiative Support Corporation. For more than 25 years, LISC has been driving social and economic impact by investing in American communities as a trustworthy intermediary. And that means pooling public and private dollars to drive, in this case, broadband access and adoption for income insecure families. And we heard a lot of exciting detail about the tremendous opportunity in North Carolina to do that with resources that will flow through Annette and Maggie's office. For our part, Rural LISC, we are active in North Carolina with our programming. Going all the way back to the start of the pandemic in early 2020, LISC helped the National Digital Inclusion Alliance define the concept of digital navigator. These are the trusted, cross-trained, community-based organization staff who advance the goal of digital equity and do the work of digital inclusion. Really exciting for LISC is the emphasis on application. So as we heard already, digital equity is defined as availability, as access, as adoption, and application, you know, really speaks to economic and workforce development, education, healthcare, public safety and emergency services, civic engagement, social connections. It's truly community development work. Digital inclusion with the goal of achieving digital equity is community development work. LISC has been doing this work with 40 partner organizations that now form our national digital equity network. We have program partners in 20 states, including 4 in North Carolina, have cross-trained over 150 digital connectors or coaches. And in the last year alone, they've reached over 2,000 individuals and families. And this work has to continue, and excitingly, there'll be resources to make that possible available from these new grant programs. Going back to this idea of application, while COVID influenced the immediate focus of what a digital navigator does for LISC and for many of the field builders that are doing this work, our partner organizations have increasingly integrated this work into their larger missions. I think that's really important when we think about a workforce development organization who maybe didn't have a touch point of digital inclusion before, but is now thinking through, and for somebody who's on a job development journey, do they have access to an appropriate device for building a resume? We're moving away from paper-based applications and onto online-based applications, securing those jobs, and maybe even having the flexibility to work remotely, increasing income, reducing personal debt. What I just described is the type of story that's happened among Digital Navigator partners in the Rural List Network all across the country. And I know these success stories can be North Carolina success stories too. As a co-founder of NC Broadband Matters, I'm very aware that North Carolina stands out as a national leader in doing this work. North Carolina has had an Office of Broadband. I think it's going on 10 years. Rural LISC has been working in other states where broadband offices are just in startup mode. And the idea of knitting together what a broadband office might focus on in terms of infrastructure access with the adoption, inclusion, utilization activities, it is really, you know, the important work. It's the goal behind these new federal funding sources. And North Carolina is in a very strong position to take a leadership role here. In order to do what, right? So from Rural List perspective, any digital inclusion, any digital infrastructure is meaningless without end users. So as I said, adoption and training are key. Rural List, for its part, is committed to programs that directly benefit and support rural communities. This place-based work is happening in North Carolina. From our purview, we've worked with an organization serving Rockingham and Alamance County, another serving Elizabeth City, a third that jump-started their work in Halifax County and Enfield, North Carolina, and has expanded that across the entire Upper Coastal Plain Council of Governments region. And lately, the Wilson Community Improvement Association has joined Rural List's portfolio of digital navigators who, you know, recognize that the infrastructure doesn't matter if there isn't adoption and training, there isn't an emphasis on utilization, and they're imagining the path forward and very much inspiring their peers. Gold yellow is my new favorite color, seeing Maggie's map. It's really exciting to see how many digital inclusion plans are underway in North Carolina. And congratulations, North Carolina, for setting the precedent-setting goal of all 100 counties having those plans. We haven't seen that in other states where Rural List is working, so it's definitely an advantage. One other perspective that I want to bring is investing in local community organization capacity. Really important. So LISC is an intermediary. We invest in community-based nonprofits in order to extend their reach. That's what capacity building is. This is doing the important work that they do better, more sustainably over the long term. And our investments in select organizations and their leaders nurtures their engagement and expertise on broadband issues. It's been really exciting to see both sides of the value stream. You know, those organizations that have come to Rural List as digital navigator partners are stepping into the broadband planning role. One of my favorite stories comes from Perry County, Alabama, where our digital navigator leader went through our training, was able to support many community members with access, for example, seniors having access to tablets to complete telehealth appointments and the like. This leader found herself at school board meetings and town council meetings where consideration was being given to internet service providers who may be serving Perry County, Alabama. She found that she had a voice and a perspective to offer as far as what infrastructure solutions would best serve this county. That's important, right? It doesn't have to always originate from the infrastructure access side, the adoption and utilization leaders who are meeting community members from their place-based community organizations can be brought into the work of making these important infrastructure investment decisions, and vice versa. Infrastructure investment decisions that include those community-based organizations that have a reach into communities that haven't necessarily been participating with the internet, using internet-enabled technology. Right, have a lot of perspective to add in terms of what infrastructure solutions are going to be a great fit. So this is a moment for really integrated work. And that brings me to my third point. What LISC has seen a great deal of on the ground is how important it is to build public-private partnerships, broad-based stakeholder groups to advance digital equity. Technology solutions in rural America, we've seen this in North Carolina, we're seeing this all over the country, are as varied as the demographic itself. Rural America, urban America, right? These technology solutions are as varied as the places where this infrastructure is meant to serve. There's no one size fits all. And it's the effective, trustworthy partnerships that accelerate the great work getting done. So we have found that when state, local, and federal officials, together with ISPs, together with charitable donations and foundations, together with community-based organizations, all working together, that's critical for meeting meaningful progress. And in North Carolina, I'm very encouraged and heartened by the idea that developing digital equity plans is a way to move economies forward. It's a way to move communities forward. It's a way to ensure more widely shared, robust prosperity in our state. So one tool that we've built that I want to tell you about, and I hope will be useful to you, this is a free, easy to access ARC-based map. What you're seeing on the screen is an EBB enrollment map. So if you'll remember, EBB was the Temporary Emergency Broadband Benefit program enacted by the Congress in COVID, the height of the pandemic, offering a $50 discount per month on internet service. That benefit did go to ISPs, was meant to serve households that otherwise couldn't afford the internet. In North Carolina, from Western North Carolina in the Bostic area to Central North Carolina in the Asheboro area to Eastern North Carolina in the Scotland Neck area, those statistics are called up here from the Ruralist EBB snapshot map. Just an average of 10 to 20% of eligible households enrolled in the EBB program. We'll be releasing our affordable connectivity program map on a quarterly basis. The ACP map, enrollment map, is eminently forthcoming in the next week or so. I'll put the link to our website in the chat. Please use this as you're building your digital equity plans. This is a great tool to discover those pockets of opportunity where there's high eligibility for these important benefit programs and low adoption. So it's a tool meant to help digital navigators, digital inclusion practitioners, digital equity plans, no matter who is building them or implementing them, really identify opportunities to make more connections. So just a final concluding thought before I pass it back to Maggie and Annette. One of the things that we've learned over the last 24 months, it's really the human infrastructure that moves digital infrastructure forward. How fortunate we are in this moment with the state's eminent submission of their planning dollar funding request to do planning work over the next year. Let's make these broad-based, inclusive plans that really tap into the energy, know-how, passion, commitment, reach, right? Trust-based reach that community organizations have into North Carolina communities, integrate what they know and understand into the larger infrastructure plans, and we'll get this work done. With that, I'll pass it back to Maggie. Or Deb, I guess, because we're gonna have Q&A.
Well, passing it back to Maggie would be a good thing to do too, because she's run a lot of these sessions. Boy, don't y'all think we are just amazingly lucky to have people with this level of experience, say, actively working on our part across North Carolina, across the country. I'm just so pleased to know these folks and to be part of it. And I want to throw out one shout for the map that Krista just put up. I'm working with a couple of counties in some other states and have been using that map with the EBB and the idea that ACP is coming to be able to help them drill down to the zip code level so they can get really fine tuned the planning for working on subsidies and getting that message out and identifying where the best partners, again, looking for local trusted people. If you've got a area, excuse me, a zip code that pops up as being really low in participation, but high in eligibility, and you look within that region for a partner that could be trusted, whether it's a church or a community center or whoever it would be, you're much further along the road. You can really jumpstart this effort around the subsidy. And so I encourage all of you to check that out, check the map out, get familiar with it, because when the new version comes out, the information will be more current and relevant. And you'll have something you can go to your ISPs with too and say, here's a community that could take up a lot of, could be good customers. And you can help us work with them to get the subsidy information out to them. And a lot of the ISPs are actively working in that arena. So it doesn't have to all be nonprofits. We can pull in partners of every stripe. I'm going to start the discussion now. This is a panel discussion. I'm going to start. I'll throw a few questions out to the group. But I'm also wanting to leave the door open to the group to ask each other questions or to raise points. So this is very informal, and we're just gonna, and everybody was so efficient with their use of time that we've got lots of time to cover lots of subjects. And I encourage all of you in the audience to ask questions, make comments in the chat, and we'll have time at the end to, I think, to cover whatever comes across the door there. I'm going to start out by, I mean, you've touched on it. Different ones of you have mentioned different words, different ideas that are important to moving it forward. But can we have a roundtable discussion on what do you see as the critical success factors? What do the more successful efforts you've been engaged with, what do they have in common? So we can help all of us learn to what to look for and what to nurture when we're getting our own initiatives going. Anybody can jump in. Everybody's nodding their head. You all know a critical success factor or two. So just throw some out there.
Krista? I can start.
Yeah.
Okay, so what I would say, and this is the perspective of supporting, now 15 digital inclusion plans, and we're really trying to analyze what does make a successful plan. We're coming out with a report this summer. The answer, of course, is that it depends. But so often it depends. It's all about finding the right person in the county or in the region who understands that this is an issue and wants to really move it forward. And so having that local champion is imperative to get something off the ground, and is something that we will need to work on from a state level is finding those champions around the state. We've also found a real success in partnering with regional councils of government. So I believe there's 16 or 18, we call them COGs around the state. And the reasons why they've been so helpful to work with from kind of a digital equity planning perspective is threefold. One, a lot of them have been working on broadband infrastructure issues, but have been focused on economic development for their region. And so it's not a big leap for them to move to digital equity or digital inclusion. The second is they're planners by trade. So when you start talking to community partners about developing a community strategic plan, a lot of people feel a lot of anxiety around that. They don't know where to start. And I don't blame them. It's daunting. But that's what COGs do for a living. And then finally, they know their regions really well. So they're very good at tapping into the regional strengths. They understand where there are challenges. And so I'll just leave that to say that is one partner that we've really leaned on in this work. But I'd love to hear what others think as well.
I saw in the chat someone asked for practical advice, right, as they're starting to build these plans. And in every county, right, there is at least one organization and possibly several that can both sustain the momentum on a longer term process, in terms of building the plan, but also the implementation. And so it's be open to the idea that there are a diversity of organizations that actually have already been doing the work of digital inclusion, perhaps since the dawn of the commercial internet. We just have a new vocabulary for it. LISC has made grants, these 40 organizations, to youth service organizations, economic development organizations, that's chambers of commerce, work serving and job training organizations, telehealth organizations. My favorites are the Cultural Heritage Center and the Fire Station, who joined our network, libraries, community action agencies, already very strongly oriented to the idea of one-to-one community-based support, right? Who have outreach to community members who are infrequent users, you know, of the internet, or maybe have that affordability barrier in terms of a home internet subscription, in terms of access to a device. And it's all of these organizations that are going to contextualize this work, right? So it's not being part of the digital economy for the internet's sake. It's, is an individual motivated to move into a better job, to manage their personal finances better, to manage their health, right? To be more socially engaged in a, you know, period of isolation like we saw with COVID. Who's going to have knowledge of that? That's community-based organizations that are already offering human services to community members. And those types of services, right, can be civic in nature. It can be about workforce development, libraries, job development organizations. It can be related to, you know, a vast array of things. So I think the practical advice is asset mapping, right? We talk a lot about, it's kind of a technical term, but the idea of the asset map of community-based organizations. Every county has them. You know, sometimes we look to the public sector in terms of cooperative extension, right? Or libraries, but they're there. They should be consulted, and their insights should be incorporated into plans. And then when the implementation dollars flow down, those organizations might be very suitable as subgrantees, right? On some of these grant programs. To deliver the implementation. I think my concluding thought is we have to expect and be ready to sort of tolerate the idea that this work happens best when it's delivered in a one-to-one type of fashion, right? So person to person, this idea of human infrastructure moving digital infrastructure forward doesn't just sound nice, it's really quite true, right? And so we want to identify those organizations that can be part of sustained work. And so the practical recommendation is find them and include them in your planning conversations.
Yeah, and I'll just simply add to that quickly is that my panelists are correct that the right mix of investments, the right mix of partners to execute the right digital inclusion plan is very important. And as a person coming from a philanthropic background, I would say we can't leave out that community. They are very passionate about this work. They want to be at the table, and we need to, you know, utilize their experiences, their best practices, and the lessons they learn to really inform our digital equity plan for the state. We know that foundations have made investments in these community organizations, and they've seen what works and what doesn't work. And I think that they really want to be part of the solution. And so I think we definitely need to have them at the table and include them there. We know we have a very unique opportunity to make a difference in this state, a major change. And so that is really what we're looking to do and excited about working together for that. So
I'll throw in a thought or two because I've worked at different scales, local, state, and even on some national policy issues with the Appalachian Regional Commission, and done a lot of case studies in the area. And one of the critical success factors that I see is a need for sustained leadership. And someone has to own this. I mean, you build together a coalition, but there has to be some engine that keeps that moving forward and keeps the meetings going. And when people get tired or they're not seeing progress or they're not seeing hope, there has to be some person, I mean, it really comes down to individuals who are committed to this, who own it, who see it as path forward. You know, they can be Pollyanna, whatever, or they can just be by force of personality, keeping people together. But that's really important. And, you know, you know your communities, you know who those people are. And when the phone rings and you answer it and it's them, you know, you're going to end up saying yes. So just go ahead and do it, you know, because you're going to end up in a good place. So that's worth giving a lot of thought to. And if you don't want to be that leader, then, you know, recruit someone who can, who's got the time. And I would say the importance of nonprofits, you know, however you define them in your community. These are people who are used to doing things for nothing. I mean, they're volunteers. This is their mode of operation. So take advantage of them in a positive way, you know, or in a negative way if you have to, but engage the nonprofit members in the effort. And that's all really, really important.
I want to speak to that real quick, yeah. Deborah, about nonprofits, building their capacity. It's been said earlier among our panelists, and Krista brought this point home, building the capacity of our community-based organization and nonprofits. People rely on nonprofits so much to do so much with so little. We don't want that to be the case. That's why we want to be sure that nonprofits are paying attention to these opportunities for these investments. And so we want to do that, as well as, and then just wrapping up, that finding champions you talked about and people are talking about in the chat about extreme ownership. We will be looking to find out who is that champion? Who is that champion in these various counties that want to really be involved in the leadership of leading this work in their county?
And I just wanted to note, Deb, one more thing. I think you're right about the sustained ownership. Someone or some entity needs to own this. But I'd also argue one entity can't do everything. And so that's why having coalitions, and what Annette said and what Krista said, and Deborah, what you added to, of having coalitions that, you know, the library system is focused on this element of the plan, and they know where to go to get resources, they know how to implement that, and the school system. And I know we've had some questions in the chat about engaging higher ed, the school system, the community colleges are working on this element, the churches are doing ACP outreach. And so there needs to be ownership by an organization or a person, but that person cannot do it alone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I offer to anecdotes? Stories sometimes have stickiness. So a favorite from Northeast Alabama, where it's the Chamber of Commerce that became our digital navigator partner, which, you know, is a little bit unusual, right? We had found a lot of community action agencies that already knew how to do the work, but the chamber was interested actually in the coalition building, right? So yes, the direct service was important, but the coalition building was the sort of superior value. And the report out from their grant was so powerful. She said, we realized K-12 was doing this piece. Workforce development is doing that piece. Post-secondary was doing this piece. The tier schools, and I think they have a couple of four-year schools in the area, right? The electric membership cooperative that had recently become an internet service provider was doing that piece. And she said, we finally all got in a room together and realized we all added it up, right, to a whole that was greater than the sum of its parts. Her direct quote was, we realized that we could summit the mountain because we were already climbing it together, right? So that's really powerful for a chamber to step into that role. My background is in economic development. I love to see economic development really leaning in to community development, and broadband and digital equity is a powerful way to do that. A second anecdote from North Carolina, just the idea about whose participation can be marshaled when one organization kind of stands out, put some points on the board, you know, offers an example. And that's NC100 serving Alamance and Rockingham County. They're already doing important work, but didn't necessarily have a built-in mechanism for community outreach, right? So they spent about half of the Rural List grant tabling, right? Being in community, building their brand, describing what this opportunity is, getting folks into the door. That got the attention of others. And ultimately what it got the attention of is the local community foundation, right? So LISC's small grant was greatly surpassed by follow-on investment from the local community foundation. Similarly, in Eastern North Carolina, a small pilot effort in Halifax County has now grown to a regional strategy being led by the COG. So it's putting a little out there, building on what you already have, right? And knitting the pieces together. It's an absolutely exhaustive expression. And in the internet age, it's kind of funny to talk about reinventing the wheel, but we don't have to, right? We don't have to. These great examples are out there and we just need to build on them.
Well, you just touched on this, Kristen. It's a question I have is, what are good suggestions, practical suggestions for turning stakeholders into active partners? You know, I mean, part of it is helping organizations or entities see that their ends are better served when people are connected and can use the internet to access their resources and to share information, to help them see that we do all benefit if everybody's online and everybody's able to do it. But what are some good practices for practical approaches to turning those potential stakeholders into active partners? And you mentioned Rockingham, the NC100, and they did it. I mean, that was very strategic about the way they do it. Should it be strategic, or are there ad hoc efforts that could be effective as well?
I don't want to dominate the conversation, but I a couple of other examples popped into my head that were recently shared at a summit role listed in Washington around broadband. And one of them comes from Virginia. So in South Central Virginia, the local community foundation had been investing in hotspots. They recognized that they needed to do something during the pandemic and put about $500,000 of their annual budget into this hotspot distribution program. We came in with a broadband pre-development grant, rural listed. We had some outstanding technical assistance provided by a consulting firm. And this community foundation led the charge to form the Greater Petersburg Broadband Task Force. It was through that conversation that two rural counties and the city of Petersburg saw reason to further coordinate their efforts. And the foundation, for its part, wanted to move to from transactional work to a long-term investment and ended up committing a quarter of its annual budget to the match funds that the two counties required to submit a broadband infrastructure grant application to the Virginia State Grant Program. And that grant was awarded. And so the community foundation, you know, is suddenly in a new role. Not only are they in the role of broadband planning, but really defining what strategic investment looks like. And that caught the attention of the local HBCU, Virginia State University, who realized it too could move off campus and into the community and had a very thoughtful application to the NTIA's Connecting Minority Community Program. My fingers are crossed for them that they're ultimately awarded their grant. But again, it really is about these leveraged efforts, taking incremental steps, lifting up and amplifying what truly is strategic and integrated. I've lost track of your initial question, but hopefully that was a good example.
Turning stakeholders into active partners.
Yeah, stakeholders into active partners. Okay, right. It is possible to do more. You're kind of having those conversations about when doing more is like an integrated effort.
I want to build on that and provide like a very practical example, since that was one of the questions of what we do. And Krista actually mentioned this earlier about asset mapping or an asset inventory. So when we help to kickstart a planning effort, we encourage the planning team to bring the stakeholders together. And I'll say a lot of the times people are skeptical. They want to talk about infrastructure. They don't want to talk about these other elements of the digital divide, and moving that conversation can be very challenging. And so we have them do an asset inventory where you walk through, you know, where in your community can you access a free computer to either rent or or take home. So is that the library system? Where is there public Wi-Fi that's free? Does a business offer public Wi-Fi? So you go through these different elements of digital inclusion and people talk about, oh, I know, oh, my church does that. They have something in their parking lot. And not only one, does it teach people what digital inclusion or digital equity is, because you can say it all day, but people don't always get it right away. But then they realize, they go from a deficit mindset of, we don't have access, our community has nothing, what are we going to do in this meeting, to, oh, we do have assets, we have all of these things, and it might not be enough to, it probably is not enough to meet the needs, but we're starting from somewhere. And Krista gets back to your, we could summit the mountain because we're already climbing together. It kind of gets at that. And I'll put a link in the chat to the state's digital inclusion template. It's a very flexible framework, but in there it has that asset mapping or asset inventory activity that is extremely helpful for bringing stakeholders on board and into more active participants.
It's interesting you bring that up, because I was thinking about asset mapping, and we do, you always need to do that. You need to identify where the assets are, where can you get public access, where is there free Wi-Fi. Where can you rent or check out devices? But I kind of like looking at that from two angles, and that's, where are the physical assets that we just mentioned, but then do a map of where are the intangible, not the intangible, but the human assets. You know, who are the people, who are the organizations that you can identify from the beginning who might play a role in delivering Wi-Fi, who might be able to provide technical assistance, who could, with some minor upskilling or capacity building internally, suddenly be able to offer digital literacy training. You know, I mean, be thinking if in a forward frame, what would our community look like, and who are the likely suspects for delivering these different types of services? And that gives you a target audience that you go out after actively. If you're at the center of the planning effort, it helps identify who you need to recruit, who you actively need to recruit. And, you know, it's almost like a set of concentric circles. You start with your core, and then you identify who are the next level that needs to be brought in, and build the network out that way. It's an organic network of folks who are engaged and involved in the planning and the delivery of digital inclusion activities and resources that you're building from the beginning. Because I don't think I'll just say this, there is no place that has this solved. I mean, every community has ways to improve, and they have populations that are not being touched, and identifying who those populations are and who's the most effective at reaching them, and what type of intervention is needed. It really is planning. It really involves a lot of strategy, but it can be a lot of fun too. I mean, it really can be. For any of you who are looking at, I mean, we're sitting here talking about how much work this is. It's good. It's John Lewis's job. You're doing good work. You're doing good things. Good things to do this. We've touched on this too, and Maggie, you gave a great overview of the state and the local resources, and you've touched on community partners like Dogwood Foundation. What are some of the more non-obvious sources of resources that could be leveraged? You know, there's the local community, if it's a local community foundation of 50 people, it doesn't have to be millions of dollars. Is the point. So what are some of the non-obvious sources of assistance and resources that can be leveraged? I'm talking about financial resources, because it does take a little money to move this forward. It can't all just be goodwill. Anyone think of something?
Well, I'll just throw out, local government has funds, not just the ARPA funds, but funds that they already had that they want to invest in this. They saw their students struggle. They saw their small businesses and Main Street struggle with various issues around access to technology. And so I believe they're passing budgets that incorporate broadband or even digital inclusion plans. And so I think that we shouldn't just sit back and say they don't have any money, but they should look deep, look at what they're proposing and see where the space is there to support organizations doing this work.
I want to highlight just one piece. The legislative action that renews community action organizations passed recently, that I'm struggling to remember exactly what that's called, but reauthorization, defining digital inclusion as an allowable expense, or the activities of digital equity being allowable expense for community action. Community action serves every region of the country. So I think this is a really valuable time, since community action organizations are very well positioned in terms of that outreach to community members that do sit on the other side of the digital divide. Now that they have resources that they can sort of build their time to, right? To do this work, to coordinate very closely with community action, especially in the planning process that North Carolina is about to go through.
Krista, are you referring to the banks and the Community Reinvestment Act that allows them to do that, or is this something separate?
This is the Community Service Block Grant, which funds in part community action agencies. They also are supported by private investment, and LISC, for its part, has invested in a network of 150 financial opportunity centers, many of which are community action agencies. And since I brought that up, I did see a question about metrics. Our Digital Navigator program has measured, devices distributed, skill credentials acquired, right? We loved Literacy Minnesota's North Star credential for digital literacy. Individuals served on the basis of whatever their intake questionnaire may have described in terms of what would meet their need, right? And so that's pretty iterative and based on the individual. But specific to community action agencies, or in the case of LISC's financial opportunity centers, where job and financial coaching is the main focus. What those organizations have done with the Digital Navigator program is really measure personal financial issues, right? Did someone move into a better job after they received an intervention that included the Digital Navigator service? Does that job pay better? In terms of one example, an individual in Columbia, Missouri, was touched by the Digital Navigator program, built some digital literacy skills, moved into a job that required some technical acumen. That job now pays $4 an hour more. This individual was able to reduce their personal debt. So those types of metrics, right? There are organizations that are tracking those types of metrics. And so it's not at face value really about the digital inclusion, as it is other metrics that relate to personal advancement or the larger community development and enterprise. So I do think it's important to think expansively about what we are measuring, right? It is about access to devices and access to internet. As Maggie pointed out, a reliable, affordable, as NC Broadband Matters talks about, secure home internet connection being superior to mobile options. But in this era, sort of defining and using as a metric, does every household have the option to participate with the internet through a mobile network or through a wired home connection, right? Isn't that sort of the definition of middle-class opportunity? So my concluding thought there is that we should think expansively about what we're measuring and sort of embed or bake in these digital inclusion metrics into larger community and economic development goal setting and measurement.
So Deb, we do have a couple questions from the audience.
Yeah. Okay.
If we can jump in at that point, they've been so patient. We have a question from Don, who says, and we've touched on some of this, on the state NCDIT website, there are many opportunities for K through 12. Will the state start to focus on higher education support for digital literacy? Some campuses are not convinced digital literacy is a topic of value. Who'd like a shot at that? Maybe there isn't an answer on that.
I mean, I think, Don, the short answer is yes. I know our team is meeting with you later this week. I know that Kaya Edwards on our team has been working really closely with the community college system. But I think we would love your thoughts on how to do this better. We are a pretty much brand new team. I see Annette nodding her head. So Annette, if you have anything more to answer, but we'd love to learn from you and to work with you on it.
Yeah, I would just really echo what Maggie says. We know higher education community has a lot of resources, and I mean, who better to be able to be part of the strategy and part of the skills building than the higher education community. So we'll be looking to work together as we develop a strategy, but I do think we can come up with some really great success factors.
I think there's a quick story. Part of the way you change institutions is just making them aware that they can change and what the benefits are. And there's a really good model, a good story from Carteret County, where the community college sought a grant and wanted to develop, to put satellite public access facilities around the county to be able to deliver classes for healthcare workers. And they make those centers available for the public to use off hours when there aren't classes going on. So they've accomplished a distribution of public access resources around the county. It was paid for with funds that the community college sought. Everybody wins. It's a win-win. So it's, you know, if we can lift up stories like that and make sure that the other institutions know about them and what the benefits are, maybe it can spark some creative thinking on their part, and they can take some initiative and learn from what Carteret did. And I know the president of the community college down there would be happy to share that story and the path she went down to get the money to do that.
We've got a question from Sarah. We might've touched on this already. Since digital inclusion involves so many different audiences that translate to different state departments, how can the state work together to build effectiveness into their solutions? Effectiveness.
I think Krista kind of touched on this. She was talking from a community based organization perspective perhaps, but I think Sarah, you're absolutely right that so many state agencies are working in digital inclusion or have some sort of, should have some sort of ownership, but don't necessarily call it that. And so some of what I think our office needs to do is some education around that, but also tying other metrics to digital inclusion metrics, right? So what was shared about, upskilling, being able to learn how to do a new skill and then have a higher paying job because of that, that ties into workforce development. And a lot of those partnerships are being created or have been created. I know that DIT works really closely with a lot of state agencies, but I think being really intentional and strategic about making sure that those agencies understand how their work overlaps with digital inclusion and digital equity and to be able to measure those outcomes.
One last question, which is mine, which is so often it's the chicken and the egg issue. You might have someone who cares about digital inclusion, but they can't do it on a volunteer basis. They're already volunteering a million different ways. And so, Krista, how do people get access to your organization and find out how they can tap into some of the grants that you've been talking about?
Well, the link that I shared to the Emergency Broadband Benefit Snapshot Map does take folks back to our Digital Navigator page, which has a number of resources. Our Broadband Pre-Development Grant Program is described there. So click on that link to see everything that ROLIS has to offer in terms of broadband, but also the larger LISC organization, right, is a national intermediary making investments in communities across the country, across a diverse range of community development investment areas, not just infrastructure, although we certainly see it as not only cross-cutting from a community development perspective, but at the individual level, really what people call a super determinant of health, right? That that it's a cross-cutting issue in, when it comes to individuals, community-based organizations, and really our regions and our state. So that's a way to get in touch with us. I think there was a second part to your question. Catherine?
It gets back to the funding. It's just that, you know, everybody's so exhausted right now. There's a lot of volunteer efforts going on, and it would help just to find some funding to help, you know, pay for someone's work. So I naturally thought of your organization, but there probably are others, and we've talked about some, but can't say it enough, right?
Right. Well, where our philanthropic reach, doesn't extend, I think we did talk a lot about community foundations in North Carolina that might want to leverage their resources, not just their resources, but confer status on processes. There was some discussion in the chat about, certain important stakeholders not necessarily seeing value or a role. Let's find those champions that can articulate what the value and role is. Sometimes that matters more than the money. We actually hear that a lot from ruralist grantees. It's not really the money, certainly helps, but it's not just the money, right? It's the putting the spotlight on the opportunity, building the capacity, helping strengthen the voice of a stakeholder within a larger stakeholder process. And yes, we're tired, but this is it, right? The once in a generation, the century defining investment, the finally catching up to the rest of the world to ensure the United States and frankly, North Carolina's competitiveness in the global economy. So we should dig deep and reach out, right? And it does take some resources, but it won't just be our sweat equity, right, that gets this done, because the planning process that we're investing in now is going to have significant follow-on implementation dollars that Annette and Maggie talked about. So this is a good time to put your hand up and say, I'm in, write me into the plan, right? Because then there will be resources to fund that important implementation work and not depend on volunteer time.
Those were great closing comments, Kristen. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
I think we are at the bottom of the hour, or close to. So I just want to thank all of you for this extraordinary conversation, which is the very beginning of the conversation, as we all know, and being a part of really a completely historical moment. I want to remind the audience that anybody who has registered for the webinar will be sent, likely by the end of the day, a copy of this webinar, an archive copy. We will be posting that on our website, ncheartsgigabit.com, along with any of the presentations here. And turn your attention to our website. We've got lots of other good webinars, including Why Broadband Matters to Farmers, which we just had last month, actually in March, and Why Upstream Still Matters, which is an important part of the conversation about making sure that everybody is connected, but connected the right way. With that, I want to thank Deb. I want to thank all of our speakers. And Deb, would you like the final goodbye?
Well, I'm going to shout out to Maggie, who mentioned she's got a report coming out this summer on what they've learned from Band NC. So I didn't know about that, and I'm going to look forward to reading that. And the key words I heard in this were partnerships and the value of trust and the importance of customizing the solution to your local situation. So if you just go home and think about those three terms and think about some of the other things you've learned, I think it'll give you a good place to start. Thank you all for coming. And we'll just be continuing this conversation throughout the coming months, because it is a very, very dynamic situation. And it's about time, isn't it? I mean, it's about time we did something about this, and now we can. Thank you all, and goodbye.
Thank you.
Goodbye, everybody. Bye.